So I want you to just close your eyes for a second. I mean, unless you're driving or, operating heavy machinery.
Right, yeah, please keep your eyes open if you're driving.
Exactly. But if you can, just imagine a classic watercolor painting. Usually when we think of watercolors, you picture these like incredibly clear skies, soft, gentle brush strokes just sort of blending into each
Oh,
other.
for sure. Like a perfectly calm lake reflecting the afternoon sun or something.
Yeah, exactly. It's supposed to be this comforting, deeply peaceful visual experience. I feel like we have this collective cultural understanding that a watercolor is, well, it's safe. It's like a Sunday afternoon hobby, you know?
It's almost a cliche of tranquility, really. We just assume the medium itself is designed to offer us a moment of zen,
Yeah.
capturing a landscape that is just sitting there, quietly waiting to be admired.
But today, for this deep dive, we are taking that entire expectation of peace and tranquility, putting it in a highly combustible little box, and setting it on fire.
Literally and figuratively.
Right. Our mission today is to unpack a piece of contemporary art that basically defies everything you think you know about how watercolor is supposed to behave. We're looking at a painting titled Bomberos.
Which translates to firefighters.
Yes, by the artist Jairo Duque. And using the artist's own personal notes alongside the intensely specific technical sheet for the artwork, we're
Oh.
going to explore how a devastating ecological and human tragedy was transformed into this visual testimony.
And honestly, it is intense.
It really is. I have to tell you, looking at the high-resolution scans of this piece, it practically radiates heat just looking at it.
Oh, absolutely. But to really grasp the weight of what Duke has done here, we need to ground ourselves in the facts of the event first. Because according to his own texts, this isn't a piece of caprice or, some whimsical exercise of abstract imagination.
Hey, it's very real.
Exactly. It is a very direct, visceral response to the massive wildfires that completely ravaged Southern California back in 2021.
Oh man, 2021. I remember watching the news coverage day after day. I mean, we're talking about places the whole world recognizes. Pacific Palisades, Santa Monica, Malibu.
These iconic coastal paradises that, in literally a matter of hours, were turned into absolute disaster zones. And these weren't your average manageable seasonal brush fires either.
No, they were massive.
Right. They were the culmination of years of extreme, prolonged droughts, record-high global temperatures, and those infamous Santa Ana winds. The winds were acting like a giant invisible bellows, just whipping the flames into an absolute frenzy across the canyons.
I have to push back a little here, though, on behalf of anyone listening who might be wondering the exact same thing I was.
Okay, lay it on me.
Well, if the goal is to capture a disaster of that magnitude, we live in an era where literally everything is documented down to the microsecond. I mean, everyone evacuating had a smartphone recording out their car window.
That's true, yeah.
We have thousands of hours of 4K drone footage flying directly over these incredibly massive flames. We have award-winning photojournalism, gripping survivor interviews, all of it. So, what value does an abstract watercolor painting on a piece of paper really offer? Why not just watch a high-definition documentary to understand what happened?
See, what's fascinating here is the distinction between documenting the physics of an event and documenting its psychology.
The psychology.
Yeah. A camera mounted on a drone flying over Malibu is going to give you the cold, objective data. It tells you the scale of the fire, the speed of the wind, exactly which ridge is burning at what time. It basically shows you the mechanics of the disaster.
Right, it's just the facts.
Exactly. But this painting, which Duke explicitly states, was born from an, quote, emotional urgency. It isn't trying to compete with a camera lens. The painting is designed to bypass the intellect and transmit exactly how it felt to be utterly vulnerable to a sudden climate collapse.
Oh, wow. So it's about the feeling, not the facts.
Exactly. It's capturing the human terror, the disorientation, and the atmospheric suffocation that a 4K video just coldly observes from a distance.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. When you look at the source text, specifically the technical sheet for the artwork, there is this geographic and temporal dissonance that absolutely blew my mind.
Oh, the dates.
Yes. The document explicitly states that this piece was created in Duke's studio in Whittier, California, and it's dated January 2025. That is like 4 full years after those specific 2021 fires.
Right, and that time gap is totally crucial to the
It
process.
has to be, right? Because think about the definition of an art studio. It is a safe, quiet sanctuary. It's a space of total control and relative silence.
You definitely cannot paint a massive, chaotic, roaring disaster while you were running for your life from it.
Exactly. You only survive. So the studio in Whittier acted as a sort of like a distillation chamber. By creating the work in 2025, the artist had the necessary distance to process not just the raw visual memory of the flames, but the collective trauma of the event.
That distance allows for synthesis. And one of the key realizations Duke mentions in his notes is recognizing the fire as a ruthless equalizer.
That idea of the fire as an equalizer is terrifying, but honestly, completely true. A massive wildfire doesn't check property values before it jumps a ridge.
No, it really doesn't care.
It strips away all of our class illusions. I mean, it burns a multi-million-dollar luxury mansion with the exact same ferocity that it burns a modest home or just a patch of wild scrub.
Right. Facing a disaster of that magnitude, your zip code and your bank account entirely lose their meaning. We are all equally fragile when the ecosystem turns on us.
Okay, let's unpack this a bit more. Because processing that vulnerability wasn't just an abstract mental exercise for him. The way he translated that realization onto the paper is incredibly mechanical.
Oh, you mean the specific materials?
Yeah, the technical sheet doesn't just say he used paper and paint. It gets super specific. He used Arches 640-gram cold-pressed rough-grain paper in a 15 by 22-inch format combined with Daniel Smith watercolors.
Very specific.
Right. And if you aren't spending your weekends in specialized art supply stores, let me clarify that 640-gram paper is essentially like painting on a dense, heavy piece of cardboard. But I have to ask you, why does it actually matter that it's cold-pressed and rough-grain?
Well, it matters because the physical structure of the paper dictates the entire visual language of the painting. It's the literal foundation.
Okay, how so?
So in paper manufacturing, hot press paper is run through heated rollers, ironing it out until it is completely smooth and uniform. The cold press paper is made without that heat, preserving the heavy, chaotic texture of the felt blankets used in the pressing process.
Right, so it's not smooth at all.
Not even a little. Because it's rough grain, it has microscopic peaks and valleys all across the surface. If you were to look at it under a microscope, it actually resembles a miniature topographic map.
Like looking down at the mountains and valleys of the California coast from an airplane or something.
The exact same jagged, unpredictable terrain. And this is where the physics of the paper come into play. During the creative process, Duke floods this textured paper with a massive amount of water heavily saturated with these Daniel Smith pigments.
Your reds and blacks, right.
Yeah, specifically the deep earthy reds, vibrant oranges, and heavy sooty blacks. And as that flood of water moves across the rough terrain of the paper, the heaviest particles of the pigment physically drop out of the water suspension and settle deep into the microscopic valleys.
Wait, really? The pigments literally get trapped in the terrain of the paper.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
It's a physical phenomenon in watercolor known as granulation. Because of how these specific pigments interact with those cold-pressed valleys, you don't get a smooth, pleasant gradient of color that you might expect from a traditional landscape painting.
Right, because the paper is fighting back, in a way.
Exactly. The result is this gritty, dirty, deeply abrasive texture on the page. It perfectly mimics the physical reality of suffocating smoke and airborne ash. Duke notes that his goal was purely expressionist.
So he wasn't going for a photograph?
No, he wasn't trying to paint a photorealistic picture of a fire. He was trying to paint the physical sensation of asphyxiation.
There's a brutal irony here, too, if you think about it. Water is naturally our main weapon against fire. It's what we use to extinguish it, you know?
Oh, that's a great point. Yeah.
Yeah, but here, Duke is using the uncontrollable fluid dynamics of water to actually simulate the chaotic spread of the flames. Because watercolor is notorious for bleeding and blooming unpredictably across a wet surface.
It really is. It has a mind of its own.
Right. So by heavily flooding the paper, the water just ignores the boundaries of the artist's brush, taking those heavy pigments wherever it wants to go.
The artist essentially willingly cedes control to the medium.
Exactly like humanity having to cede control to a massive wildfire.
Yeah.
The water behaves like the fire itself, ignoring human containment lines and just violently jumping from tree to tree across the landscape. The artist is simulating the uncontrollable physics of a wildfire by leveraging the uncontrollable fluid dynamics of the paint.
The medium truly becomes the message. However, within all that fluid, chaotic abstraction, where the water and the granulated pigment are essentially doing whatever they want, there's one highly deliberate deeply jarring element.
Oh, I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, it completely shatters the natural chaos of the composition.
You're talking about the massive red stain on the right side of the paper. It is literally impossible to miss amidst all these natural, gritty tones of charcoal and organic fire. There is this vibrant, intense, almost toxic-looking red cloud that just dominates the upper space.
Yeah, it looks completely artificial.
It really does. It looks like a mistake at first glance.
But that artificial clash is highly intentional. That red cloud represents the fire retardant dropped by tanker planes and helicopters.
The chemical drops. Okay, but here's what I found so strange when I was reviewing the source notes. Those fire retardant chemicals, like the famous Phos-Chek they use all across California, they aren't actually naturally red. They are clear or white chemicals.
They are, yeah. But forestry and fire authorities intentionally dye them. They mix in iron oxide, or what are called fugitive dyes, for a purely logistical reason.
Which is fascinating, because fugitive dyes are a specific class of colorants in chemistry that are inherently unstable. Like, they're designed to fade away entirely when exposed to ultraviolet light from the sun.
Right.
But the authorities dye the chemical a toxic, bright red so that when a pilot is flying a massive tanker plane through skies with absolute zero visibility, I mean, skies thick with dark smoke and flying ash, they can see exactly which geographic zones have already been treated.
And this raises a really important question about our intervention in nature. Conceptually, that red stain isn't just an aesthetic contrast to the dark smoke. It represents the organized logistical resistance of humanity.
It's the human footprint in the sky.
Exactly. It is the visual, undeniable proof of human intervention. It's evidence of pilots risking their lives in apocalyptic skies to impose a chemical limit on a force of nature.
And the fact that they use fugitive dyes that are guaranteed to fade and disappear over time, it just perfectly mirrors the reality of our situation, doesn't it?
How so?
Well, our chemical intervention is temporary. It's a fleeting, fading line drawn in the dark against an overwhelming, permanent, natural threat.
Wow. Yeah, that's a really powerful way to look at it.
Which brings our view from the sky right down to the ground, because all of that massive aerial engineering, those super dangerous chemical drops, they only exist to buy precious time for the people actually on the ground.
Right, the firefighters themselves.
Exactly. Which brings us to the anchor of the entire composition at the very bottom of the painting. Against this massive wall-to-wall chaos of fluid fire and toxic red retardant, there is a tiny, sharply defined silhouette of a single firefighter.
It really anchors the whole piece.
It does. And looking at this, it really subverts the way we are usually fed stories of bravery in the media.
Oh, it departs significantly from standard heroic narratives.
Well, yeah, think about the Hollywood disaster movie cliche. The hero is always a highly specific, named individual. We get the dramatic, slow-motion close-up on their face.
Right, with the perfectly placed soot on their cheeks.
Yes. They have a determined scowl, and they usually deliver some witty catchphrase before single-handedly saving the day. It's highly individualized and honestly pretty ego-driven.
But Doug strips all of that away here. The firefighter in Bomberos is entirely faceless. It is just a stark, black shadow. There are no eyes, no nose, no expression, no badge number.
Nothing to identify them at all.
Exactly. And erasing the specific identity is what allows the figure to carry the conceptual weight of the entire piece. The moment you give that figure a face, it becomes a portrait of one specific person.
Right. It just becomes a painting of a guy named John or a woman named Sarah.
Exactly. By keeping the figure as an anonymous silhouette, it transcends individual identity and becomes a collective representation. That shadow embodies all the warriors against the fire, as Duke respectfully refers to them in his notes.
And for you listening, think about how that psychological trick works on your brain when you look at art. Because the figure has no face, you aren't looking at someone else. You are a sort of forced to project yourself into that empty shadow.
Oh, that's a great point. You become the figure.
Right. And when you do, the extreme difference in scale hits you like a freight train. Yeah. You have this tiny, fragile human shape facing down a towering apocalyptic wall of flame. It highlights our extreme physical fragility as a species.
But at the same time, the shadow stance is firm. They aren't running away. Duke describes this posture as a silent resistance.
Silent resistance. I like that.
Yeah, and that concept of silent resistance connects to a really profound ethical stance outlined in the artist's notes. If you recall the relentless news coverage from 2021, The mainstream media was absolutely obsessed with the financial toll.
Oh, totally. The chyrons at the bottom of the screen were constantly tallying up the millions of dollars of lost real estate in Pacific Palisades.
Right, just fixating on the destroyed celebrity homes in Malibu.
The narrative was entirely driven by property value and lost commerce.
But this painting deliberately turns its back on that materialism. Duke's notes make it explicitly clear that his focus isn't on the lost luxury or the financial devastation.
So what is his focus then?
He is using this piece to pay homage to a sacred sense of community service. The anonymity of the firefighter highlights the people who sacrifice their own safety, not to protect property values, but to save human lives, to rescue trapped wildlife, and to protect the natural forests themselves.
That's a huge shift in perspective.
It is. It's a fundamental shift in values from the economic to the ethical.
It's prioritizing the survival of the community over the survival of commerce. And what's amazing to me is that this deeply local, community-focused message didn't just stay hidden away in that Whittier studio.
Oh, definitely got out there.
Right. This is a piece deeply rooted in Southern California, painted with a highly specific local tragedy in mind, using the literal topography of the paper to mimic the local mountains. But it was actually selected for a global stage.
Swiss exhibition, right?
Yes. The technical sheet notes that Bomberos was chosen for an international exhibition at the Art Box Thompson Gallery in Zug, Switzerland, in February 2025.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, it explains exactly why an artwork born from such a hyperlocal event resonates on a completely different continent.
Yeah, because you might wonder why an audience in the snowy Swiss Alps would connect with a painting of a California wildfire.
Well, the 2021 fires, while geographically localized, they represent an extreme vulnerability to climate collapse that the entire world is currently facing.
It's not just a California problem anymore.
Exactly. The necessity for human sacrifice, the reliance on community resilience in the face of environmental disaster, that is a universal language. It translates perfectly from the canyons of Malibu to the mountains of Switzerland.
It serves as an international warning. It basically says it doesn't matter if you live in California or in Zug. The looming threat of extreme weather and our absolute reliance on those few people willing to stand in its way concerns all of us. And what I find so compelling is how the artist views his own contribution to this global conversation. Like, Duke doesn't claim that he has created a flawless, perfect masterpiece that solves the crisis.
No, he's remarkably humble in his notes, actually.
He is. He actually calls the piece imperfect. But he says it is honest and filled with emotion, denunciation, and respect.
Which, philosophically speaking, is really the only appropriate response to a disaster of this magnitude.
What do you mean?
Well, when you are dealing with an unimaginable environmental catastrophe, no human response can be perfect. The logistical attempt to fight the fire is fraught with error, and the artistic attempt to document it is inherently limited by the medium itself.
Because it's just simply too big.
Right, it's too big to perfectly capture. But that honest attempt to capture the terror, the abrasive ash, the fading red stain of our intervention, and that silent shadow of collective resistance.
Yeah.
That honesty is what gives the artwork its profound historical weight.
So, bringing it all together, what does this all mean for us? It reminds us that art isn't just something pretty you buy to match the sofa in your living room, or a safe landscape to stare at on a Sunday afternoon.
Definitely not this piece.
No. When it's executed with this level of intention, utilizing the very physics of the paper and the paint, it becomes a living memory anchor. It's a visual cry of conscience. It proves that in the darkest, most chaotic moments of environmental collapse, there are humans willing to stand as a tiny anonymous barrier between absolute devastation and life.
It's powerful. And yet there is one final chilling irony embedded in this work that I think is crucial to consider, especially when we talk about preserving these memory anchors.
Ooh, okay, lay on me.
So we are relying on this specific artwork exhibited in an international gallery in Switzerland, analyzed by us today, representing the collective courage of these firefighters to serve as this vital, enduring historical memory of our survival.
Right. We are trusting it to carry the weight of this tragedy for future generations. It's a physical testament to the event.
But look closely at the materials on the technical sheet one last time.
Okay. The 640-gram paper.
Yes. This powerful testimony, this supposedly permanent anchor of human memory, is painted on a 15-by-22-inch sheet of 640-gram cotton paper.
Oh, wow. Wait. I see where you're going with this.
The very physical medium we are using to immortalize our battle against the fire is itself highly combustible.
Oh my God.
Just like the bone-dry forests of Southern California that it depicts, the artwork itself, and by extension the cultural memory it holds, is incredibly fragile. It is literally made of cotton. It could entirely disappear in a matter of seconds if it were ever exposed to a real flame.
That is incredibly heavy. And it honestly brings us right back to where we started this conversation today.
Full circle.
Yeah. We usually want to put our comforting watercolor landscapes in a safe, predictable little box. But whether it's a multi-million dollar luxury estate in Malibu, an ancient forest ecosystem, or a heavy sheet of cotton paper hanging in a pristine Swiss gallery, it turns out everything we build and everything we remember is just one stray spark away from becoming ash.
It's a fragile existence.
It really is. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. I want you to take that image with you today and just think about the thin, highly flammable line we walk between memory and absolute destruction. We'll see you next time.